Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, and what we all are right now, just fans, I am Shane Bacon with Max Homa, and you are listening to Get a Grip, Episode 9. And Max, you had yourself a day today. a different way to go about the coaching golf swing.
Yeah, I drove, woke up at 5, drove 4 hours to the desert, the other desert.
Palm Springs.
Hit balls for 2 hours with my coach, and then drove 4 hours home. And didn't touch anything.
And you guys, you were telling me that there was the sanitation was taken to a new level.
He stayed 6 to 8 feet away from me. He filmed with his phone and then like showed it to me from afar. I had to like kind of tell him when to stop. He would send that video to my phone. At one point, he had to touch my bag, and he pulled down his sleeves. He was trying to show me a motion. Push that. I used one divot mix to fill in the divot, and it wasn't enough, and he had already held the other one, so he then filled in the rest. It was the weirdest day ever. I packed a sandwich for the drive home because I didn't want to stop anywhere to get food. I mean, it was the most bizarre day ever.
It was an appropriate way to get a golf lesson.
It was, yeah.
But, you know, it's again, just like the last couple we've done, been a bit of a different week. We're all handling this, dealing with this. I've had a weird day just mentally trying to, you know, kind of wrap my head around this kind of globally, which is never good because then a little bit bigger than you are. You have a feel good Friday. We typically save this towards the end. I need it. I need something feel goody.
Just to preface, Shane walked into the house and looked pretty bummed out. And you are one of the most positive people I've ever
seen.
You look disheveled. You look stressed. You didn't look your chipper normal self. So we're going to start with the feel good Friday. And I have the best one I've had in a long, long, long time, maybe ever. My buddy Brian that I talked about that came out to Riviera to watch, who unfortunately had cancer.
Nice.
Got to ring the bell today. I saw it on Instagram. I got to text him. Super proud of him. Super stoked. It was very cool, too, because as I mentioned before, he was best friends with our buddy who passed away from the exact same disease, the exact same type of cancer back in when I was in college. And he has a very cool picture up on Instagram of him holding David's jersey from the high school basketball team that they played on. And he said, you know, we both got to ring the bell finally. And it was pretty cool. So that was nice. I needed a bit of good news.
Yeah, for
sure.
It's been
a bummer of a week or two, especially the last couple of days for whatever reason. So I thought that was a very, very, very fitting way to cheer me up.
Yeah, an opening shout out for very good reasons. See, there you go. I'm already smiling.
Yeah,
I already feel
back.
A little bit better about life.
We are back.
Humanity. And since we are both, you know, for the most part, I'd say self-quarantined outside of doing these podcasts and even doing these in the video. By the way, a shout out to anybody that joined us over the weekend watching the 2008
you guys are troopers.
U.S. Open. We had like 65,000 people throughout the weekend jump
65,000 sickos.
Sick weirdos.
us too.
And including us watching the 2008 U.S. Open, the entire final round. And we had to end up skipping up because it was like 5.5 hours. And we watched the entire playoff the next day on Sunday. So big thanks to you guys. There are more in the works as this continues to go. So we will keep you guys informed on social media about that. But you and I had discussed, you know, what can we do? Just the two idiots, two people with very low IQs. What can we do for other people? And we were talking about, you know, the food banks around the country are really struggling. They need donations. They need money. They're feeding people that, you know, either got fired or can't get food. Kids aren't going to school. They're not getting, you know, a couple of meals a day. I heard a story. There's a food bank in South Carolina. It gets 450 families a week. It got 450 families in one day. So people need money. We have stickers. We get asked a lot about these Get a Grip stickers that we put together. How can we get one? And I just send them. I mail them to people. I simply ask, can you write a review of the podcast as a thanks for sending it out? You know, it's an envelope, it's a stamp, whatever. Here's what we're going to do now. If you donate $5 to a food bank, any food bank, locally, you can go nationally, you can look up online which ones need it the most. They all need a little bit of help. If you donate $5 or more and you screen grab or text us to the Instagram, Get a Grip Instagram account at Get a Grip Pod, that you did this, we will send you a sticker. That's as easy as it gets. Now, Max.
This is where we get creative.
We have these really cool limited edition.
Very limited.
Get a grip hats from our friends at Imperial. They sent us kind of a first run. Here's some hats. Check them out. Tell us what you think. I've probably got, I'll say 15 to 20 of the smaller fit ones that are blue. I've got something in the 15 to 20 of just the regular white fit ones. And then I've got about 15 or 20 of the XL if you got a big dome like your boy.
Yours truly.
So this is a little steep, but again, these are limited edition.
And this is charity.
It's going to a good cause.
It's not for the hat.
For $75 donation to a food bank, if you do $75 or more, we will send you the hats until we're out, until we run out of these hats. So for it's an expensive hat, but again, it's going to a food bank. Find a food bank, donate $75 or more, screen grab that, send it to our Instagram account. Boom, we'll send you a hat. Now things are only going to get better. If you donate $150 to a food bank, I am going to write a haiku or a limerick about the person that donated, and I'm going to incorporate some golfy, maybe podcast, Max Homa stuff in it. And Max is going to cold read the haiku or limerick on the next podcast. Never seen it before. He has to read it cold, and we will give a shout out to you for doing that. And Max, you and I were talking about even going even a little bit.
We have a big idea in the.
So this was this. I'm going to let you. This was your idea. Now
what
you
was
can set the price. The price you sent me was $1,000. I think we might need to up it just a little bit.
$2,500.
Let's do $2,000.
Wait, which one's this for? The face or
this is for the thing that got 80% of your cover on Golf Digest.
So for $2,500,
fine. You're setting it.
If somebody donates $2,500, I will shave my arms
and
I will show you the bucket that I fill, the multiple buckets I fill.
Wait,
up.
Is it you're thinking just one bucket?
It's going to be multiple buckets.
$2,500 donation.
With a receipt. Needs to be a receipt. Please, for the love of God, don't fake this.
Please, for the love of all that is humanity, we need good stuff going on. We need a true donation. But if you out there are feeling charitable and you want to donate to a food bank that needs the money, $2,500, we will shave Max's arms and show it. Now, we are local Arizona guys. There's a website, azfoodbanks.org, you can go to check it out.
We'll post it on Twitter, the link.
Yeah, we'll post a few. We'll just post a couple of suggested links of places. We were looking, my sister and I were looking up, shout out Alicia, she's very helpful about stuff like this. We were looking up some of the poorest counties in the country. There's a food bank. It is msfoodnet.org. That's in Mississippi. That is a very, very, very poor area. But again, we'll post three or four suggested links to food banks. But anything you do, any food bank in the country definitely could use it. We appreciate it. We're trying to have a little bit of fun and also help with donations. So there you go. A couple of positive. I'm smiling already.
And listen, if like, again, we are all a community. We were just talking about this before we started recording. If you do anything meaningful, good for somebody else that you feel is worth, post it. You can even just DM it to me. I'll try to do something nice back for you guys. Whatever you may want me to do, you can name your price. And I'll try and accomplish that. I have a few magazines of the cover of the Hairy Arm Man laying around. I could write you a little note on that and send it to you. But I just want to see people. This is a tough time. I want to see people being nice to other people. I think this is one of those rare occasions where, we are all kind of in this together across the entire globe. Doesn't matter your political views, doesn't matter your race, doesn't matter your nationality. We are all stuck in something. The virus does not care what you look like, speak like, or smell like. And it doesn't care how hairy your arms are. Send those my way or just do it out of the goodness of your heart, please. Because I love a pick-me-up. I am a little down the dumps about our society, especially some of these people on spring break the last couple of weeks. So I'd love to see some good
stuff.
Get
off the beach, everybody. Just, again, we've said this on the last couple. There are literally four rules to follow. If you could just try to follow those four rules, it will help everybody out. And just a reminder and just remember this. If you can remember this, this will help everybody out. This isn't about you at all. It's about an epidemic that we're all going through. And even if you're the healthiest human on the planet, something could happen to you that could happen to somebody else. And that is the problem. And that's what we're trying to deal with. So those are a couple positive things.
Positive.
Then we're going to roll right into something else, Max.
I'm excited for this one.
These are, this was my idea since you.
This is your best idea.
So, ever. Oh, wow. Best idea. So we are stranded. A lot of us are stranded in our homes, in our apartments. And the old adage, the old thing we always went off, and I just watched Castaway, so this really is topical to me. Cindy and I watched Castaway the other day. And Bill Simmons did a rewatchables about Castaway. It is such a rewatchable. When's the last time you saw Castaway?
Dude, I haven't seen it in probably 8 years. Maybe
great
more.
Throw it on the TV.
It is a good movie.
Yeah, so throw that one on. So I asked you to put down 5 things you would want Max Homa to have on a stranded island, and I want you to begin. We're going to go back and forth. We can critique if you want, but I want your 5 things on a stranded island. What's your number one? And these are not in order of importance. These are just the 5 you would have.
I realize I got out of order. I love this idea. Your next idea is my favorite.
Okay, perfect.
Idea.
So, we're getting there.
People have done a stranded on an island, what do you do situation. So I want people to know that I didn't think that Shane made it up.
I have this idea. This is perfect. And then I have another idea for you later. You should write down with Lacey the 5 people that you would sleep with. It's famous.
Okay.
That's never been done either.
Go well.
Yeah, go ahead.
So did we say island or in a house? Like, are we going specific quarantine? Cause that's like a big deal on my list.
You do whatever you want.
Okay. So am I doing all 5?
I want you to, are you going island or are you going home?
Well,
or do you have both lists?
I'll go regardless of island or home. I wrote this in order on purpose because my wife did the exact same thing. It's either Scotty and Lacey.
Okay.
But Scotty.
Okay. So you know what I'll
Scotty.
Give you? Well, let's say family.
Family.
Your family.
But like definitely Scotty.
Okay, perfect. So Scotty and Lacey,
but
you're saying Scotty's
Scotty.
The first.
Yeah, if there's 2 seats on the plane to
Sorry,
get to
Lace.
This island. It's Scotty, because she literally said the exact same thing.
Okay, that's fair.
How do you know she added me? She said, I definitely need Scotty.
Now I have on my list Harlow.
Did you say, okay.
Which is my dog. So we both put our dogs on there.
Kit.
Well, so here's what I'm thinking.
I know you can figure it out.
Now, I'm thinking stranded. I wrote stranded island.
So island. All right.
I don't want Cindy and Henry to be on the island with me. I want them to be at the house.
Safe.
Safe.
Very selfish.
Food. Water. I want to take with the plane's going down, I want them to be the one in the boat that gets saved.
I love that. I'm still taking Scott.
So I'm taking Harlow
okay,
because
cool.
Harlow will be happy on the island. Doesn't
Are we
care.
On the same island by any chance?
You know what? We'll say same island, but we never know we're on it. So I'm on like the way west side and you're on the east side.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but we end up, when we're 85, we're sitting around having a gin and tonic and we both realize
I can't wait
the same
for my east side rap to just outweigh your west side rap, but neither of us know it till we somehow escape and all of a sudden have a big beef.
So it's a little bit of a genie thing with this where we can go with kind of ridiculous stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This is not.
I put strike anywhere matches because I watched Castaway.
That's really clever.
Took them a really long time to make a fire. I was in Boy Scouts early in my life. I'm not sure I could go out in the backyard and make a fire.
I'm
right
no good
now.
With like the Flint or whatever it's called. If I couldn't find it.
Yeah, there's a restaurant in Scottsdale called Flint. That's about as close as I could get, I think, to like using Flint correctly. So I'm going to go strike anywhere matches. And also, a little added bonus about strike anywhere matches, a lot of fun to strike. You can strike them on, when you're around your house, you strike them on the wall, over there by the grill. But when you're on an island,
these are the fun facts you get when you come to this podcast.
Strike anywhere matches are way better than just regular matches.
Way better.
Way better.
Strike them anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere. All right, so let's hear your second.
My second, and this was very specific to being either stuck, stranded in my house or on an island. So since we are on an island, I'm choosing a lob wedge. Just a swing, just a chip around, maybe chip some coconuts around. I need it to remain sane.
And keep yourself sharp.
Just in case, a few years down the road, I finally get picked up from this island and obviously I'd still have my tour card. They need me. So
what's the medical situation if is stranded on an island?
What if it just said lost?
Just lost.
Yeah.
Lost.
Princey's
not
see.
The TV show.
Yeah. Next start TBD. That was like when Popovich put Duncan on the bench and he just said old. That was one of my all-time favorite Popovich moments.
So a lob wedge. Now I battled with this. Between 2 things. I had basketball. And again, this isn't...
But if you're on the island.
This isn't going with the Wilson volleyball thing. I just think having a ball for myself.
I thought football for a while, but... Because you could kind of throw a football and catch it. You know, like basketball, you can't really dribble a basketball on the sand.
Yeah, but you could like lay on your back on the sand and shoot it in the air. You could kick it. You can use it as a soccer ball.
I just get a soccer ball. You could use it as a basketball and shoot
it. Maybe, you know what? You could be talking me into this. Soccer ball might be the play. A little softer. I feel like soccer balls don't deflate as fast. That might be incorrect.
I just think that's made up.
Yeah. You know what? Again, and also just a caveat to mine is my ball never deflates. It never deflates.
That would be me. I mean, Wilson never deflated.
When he stuck like yeah, hair in it.
It's all BS.
And it was fine. So I didn't go basketball. I went with my Kindle.
Oh, that's a really smart. That's unlimited 21st
books.
Century
idea. Unlimited
books. Because see, mine is a Harry Potter book, and now I feel like an idiot.
Oh man, see,
that's so dumb.
You're gonna read this. Which one would you go with?
This is the last one. It's the longest.
Do you know the name of it right off the top of your head?
I'm blank.
Is it not Goblet of Fire? What's the last one?
No, it's Deathly Hallows.
Nice. There you go.
Sorry, drew a blank for a second. I'm so sorry.
No, but I thought you nailed it.
All the Harry Potter fans.
So we both have a book now. Mine, I've got.
No, you have all of them.
I have every book. Now I have no Wi-Fi, so it's the ones I've downloaded. But I would have, you know, as whatever happens to get me on the
island. As a spiteful person that I am, I hope that they all get wiped and then you have to borrow my book.
It's like the cell phone that doesn't work. This
exactly,
Kindle's useless.
Yeah.
I'll go. Going along with survival and things you'd need, a machete.
Wow.
Going with a machete.
Hey, how cool would that be if this were to happen? Obviously, worst case scenario, plane crash, you survive, fortunately, but you end up on an island. If somehow your machete made it, like with you, didn't stab you on impact, like you kept it. That would be a really cool move.
Wait, you're assuming that I'm on the plane just carrying my machete?
That's what you have
ma'am,
it somehow.
Ma'am, is a machete okay
understand.
In the overhead?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah, TSA was real lazy.
This bag's in the way and my machete won't fit.
Hey. I'm just asking the question.
No. So I've got a strike anywhere match, a machete, my Kindle with all my books, and my dog Harlow. You've got a fourth to go.
I feel like I need like a some sort of iPod.
Music.
Like, I don't know how old school we're going to get. Obviously, a boombox wouldn't hold enough. So I'm just going to go with whatever holds the most amount of music so I could listen to. I think that would keep some
iPod,
form of sanity
I think, is a fair one. You know, okay. Go old school, click wheel iPod. What was your first iPod? Do you remember?
Like iPod 1.
Was it? Would it have the click wheel or did it have the four buttons?
It had a click wheel.
So that was
sick.
It. That was so great.
So sick.
Do you remember the first?
I felt so cool.
It was the coolest. It was one of the cooler moments of my life was when I would play my music.
And clip it on.
And I would. And remember the old ones? They had how many songs on it?
Yeah.
It'd be like 2 of 3,740. Like, I got so much. I got so many genres on this thing.
And now I just like. I can just listen to whatever I want. Yeah,
anything in the world. Anything in the world. There's somebody who's joking. I think somebody on Twitter wrote this. It's like if somebody from 50 years ago showed up at your house and they said, what's the one thing
you would
tell
them? Well, we'd kick them out because of the virus.
fair enough.
They ain't getting anywhere near my
door. Please don't come in. Well, 50 years ago, maybe they're okay.
But I'd be listening to the best music.
You go, I have a device in my pocket that can access all the information in the world and I use it to watch cat videos.
Fair.
It's so true.
Fair.
But you can find out all the information.
The cat videos.
So last thing.
I have my last thing.
That wasn't your last pick, was it?
No, this is my last one.
Okay. Do you mind going through your four real quick?
Yeah, sorry. So I have Scotty, maybe Lacey, Harry Potter book, which is obviously just the dumbest answer ever. Now, a lob wedge for the sand, an iPod, click wheel, and my fifth and final, my master's invitation, just in case I never get to play, just so I can look at it here and there to remind myself I used to be somebody.
also a nice bookmark for your Harry Potter book.
Also true. I'll just keep reading it. I could read Fred S. Ridley all day.
What is that? What's your fifth? Oh, that's just my master's invite.
No
big deal.
Yeah.
It was the 2020 master's.
I could be the coldest person ever and I wouldn't use your startup match to burn it to keep warm at all. I would hold that thing on until I died.
So my last one, now this is going to, this we talk a lot about age. I don't think you went through this era. You might have. I mean, you're
going to bring a dinosaur
person.
That was a smart idea.
I'm bringing my Dallas Cowboys starter jacket.
Oh, those were, that's cool that you grew up when they were popular because they've made an entire comeback.
For sure.
And then maybe died off again.
So I got the half zip Cowboys my dad got me for Christmas.
They're kind of always shorter at the bottom.
Way
They're
shorter
so
and
sick.
Super baggy
You let
up
your
top.
Shirt fly way long under it.
That now that's obviously fashionable now too. Yeah, it's a long shirt
so
under your
sick.
Thing. And then if you remember, Jimmy and the crew and then Switzer went to Apex was the brand. They went away from Starter So then I got the Apex Cowboy jacket.
Well, which one are you picking?
Sideline, but I'm going starter for sure.
I'll have to go starter.
Gotta go starter.
Starter is so
you can
tight.
Use it. You could use it as a pillow.
Yeah.
You can obviously you get cold.
And anytime let's just say you get picked up in 10 years, it might have made its way back around for the
They'd
third
be like,
time.
This guy has a God, this guy's got a starter jacket. Do they have Amazon Prime on this island?
Yeah.
What if my side of the island Amazon Prime and yours didn't? And you never knew it.
Yeah, that'd be a huge bummer.
Now I'm passing a starter jacket for something that almost made the cut, which was unlimited bottled water.
Okay, well, yeah. Listen, like, I'll bring a Brita and then filter out the ocean water that I'm surrounded by. So yeah, Brita is actually a really good idea.
A Brita filter.
Although Tom Hanks taught me that coconuts have water in them.
And you can,
And I have my lob wedge, so I'll just be beating that.
You know what? Actually, I didn't think about that. I didn't do it in the machete, but you could use your lob wedge.
Oh, yeah. With your swing speed, you could chop down a whole tree.
You could use it as a weapon. We already know you could break in half and stab people. Well, that's one of your go-to moves.
I think I could.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So what was the thing you were talking about?
Okay, so this is my
idea.
All-time favorite idea.
Let's go.
You said we should just pick our five favorite college basketball players of all time.
Is it time for it?
I absolutely think it is.
So I just want to say the reason we're doing this was, you know, we did a podcast last week and we completely forgot that Thursday should have been the start of the NCAA tournament. The lone of sporting event that my wife loves.
Does she really?
She loves it because she loves the bracket.
Yeah. It keeps you so involved. It keeps everyone involved. And she always probably beats you. It is so frustrating.
And checks out immediately when her team loses. An immediate check.
Listen, I get it.
Well, my favorite is, I would be on the road during a lot of this. I think the last couple of years I've been on the road during this doing PGA Tour Live or something. And she would text me after midway through Thursday, hey, I'm beating you. we have weeks until this thing's over, but she gets into it and loves it.
Hey, you gotta, when you're leading, you gotta let everybody know.
I want to hear Max Homa. I know you went to Cal and all that,
yeah.
But what was your college team growing up?
My very first team I loved, and I'm not into like the Duke North Carolina rivalry. I've enjoyed watching both teams. My dad's buddy Nolan went to North Carolina. I loved Michael Jordan, and I loved the fitted hats that had the little foot on the back
for
North Carolina, and I liked
the
baby
tar
blue.
Heel.
I always got the hat if it had that thing on the back. So I used to root for North Carolina quite a bit. I actually have been a Cal fan since I was young. My family's some of my extended family's from up there. So I was rooting for them, but they were never that great when I was growing up. So
they made a run one year. Do you remember when was that? Didn't they make a run kind of deep into the tournament one year? I feel like they had some young, like short point guard on the team that was dirty. Is that not the right team?
I mean, when I was in college, we had a team that made it with Alan Crabb.
Okay.
But I don't remember. I don't recall.
Who's the best? Do you know who the best basketball player from Cal ever was?
Yeah, Jason Kidd. Heard of him?
He's
got to be the best. Yeah.
Is there like a few from Cal?
Tony Gonzalez played on the basketball team.
Is that right? Yeah,
I just saw the highlight 2 days ago. It's sick. I mean, it's like, it's pretty ridiculous.
It's like when you watch those Nate Robinson football highlights
and
from
Allen
Washington.
Iverson when he was, it was amazing.
Iverson.
He is a freak.
Absolutely.
Have you seen the video of him dribbling the football?
Football between his legs. What are we doing here? So you and I are big basketball fans. So I grew up.
I'll cut just because you're about to get into like the actual good team you got to root for. I did root for UCLA and we had a couple good years. Or not we. They had a couple good years. Farmar was on the team.
Yeah, yeah.
Kevin Love was on the team. Russell Westbrook came to the other team. So like those were my old enough to remember and actually know what the hell I'm rooting for. That was those teams. And then they all usually lost, except for 1 year, to your team.
So I grew up in East Texas.
Oh, true. You were not an Arizona fan.
I was no. right so away. I grew up, this is weird, but I grew up in Texas. And I mean, you know, you watched Duke, UNC and all that. And Arizona wasn't really on the radar nationally, at least in where I lived. You know, they had these great teams and, you know, they had Kerr come through and Elliott and all these guys. But I got into Arizona, interesting enough, that year they made the run because I loved Miles Simon and I loved Bibby. I had a Bibby Arizona jersey.
That's kind of cool.
And I'm that was like, I was in seventh grade. And so I had no other reason to ever be affiliated with the University of Arizona, and I am going to school there.
That is really weird.
Super weird, but I was super into that team. So we're going to do our five. Now, this isn't a starting five. We thought about doing
that. Yeah, that's too hard.
We decided.
Plus, NBA now is position free.
It's pretty much position free. So I'll start.
Okay.
And this, I'm gonna kind of go in order of when I got into him.
Okay, okay.
And so
I'll try and do that.
The first player I was really obsessed with in college was Marcus Camby at UMass.
Okay,
he was so good. That team was unreal. Obviously, they have this great coach, and he was so dominant. He was kind of like Shaq at LSU, but better. So
is that possible?
Well,
is cool because we are just like no, all jokes aside, we are in a
just different, enough,
especially when you're growing up. Like, I can remember like even golf tournaments growing up, but very slightly. Whereas in college basketball, like I don't have a good timeline of when I like got into it.
Right.
When you're 12, 13, 14, you start to really love it and follow it. So like, I don't remember Marcus Camby at all.
So my town I grew up in is small. It's like 20,000 people. There's a kid named Bo Martino who one day came to school wearing a Marcus Camby UMass jersey, and I was super bummed out because I wanted to get one, and now I couldn't copy this other kid, you know? So I never had the Marcus Camby jersey. But my first player, UMass Camby.
That's pretty sweet. My first one, I'm actually going to start with an honorable mention because I need to point one out first. Okay. My honorable mention is Peter Papa George, who was the best man at my wedding. He's my best friend. He played college basketball at Long Beach State. He actually played with Casper Ware. Long story short, Casper and him are buddies. Casper is like a Drew League legend and set us up to go to the Drew League. And he said, hey, little tip, Chris Paul and James Harden are coming through tonight or today. Sorry. So get to the game. But he's like, you got to get there early because like there's going to be a crazy line. But he goes, nobody knows they're coming, but like they will by some point today. So we're like, heck yeah. So we drive up. It's in like Compton at a high school. It's pretty crazy. I'd never been before. It's pretty crazy like how low key this place is and how many great stars I get. I mean, everyone's played there. So we go in there and, you know, we know there's like a first game. So we roll in and like they're kind of finishing up. And then like the next game starts and it's pretty like, it's getting kind of crowded, but it's not really that crowded. And then PD texts Casper and goes, yo, when they playing? He goes, oh, it's tonight at 6. And it's like maybe 10 a.m. And we're like, I think we're going to leave. So it was like, cool, we went. But shout out to PD and Casper. But PD's point was, he told me to tell you that on his list, number one is any player who is on fire when Gus Johnson's on the call.
Yes.
Yes. So that's his number one.
We'll get to one of my top five that follows suit with what PD said.
But finally, my first one is JJ Redick. Always felt like if he could do it, I could do it. He would run off four screens, just sprinting. If they just had a JJ Kim, you get dizzy. He would run around the entire three-point line, run the baseline, catch in the corner, flying. And in college, he pretty much made everything. He shot free throws at like 96, 97%. I think he still has the record for a four-year free throw percentage. It was just pretty amazing to watch somebody shoot it like that. And again, like I felt like as a kid, I could do that. And that's how I felt like I played basketball when I was growing up.
So I was in college when JJ was playing at Duke. I hated JJ Redick.
For sure.
Because he got all the fanfare. He got all the national attention. Now, as an adult, I understand why. He was unbelievable. But we had a guy in my top five, and I'll go with him next, even though he's not in order.
I only thought about this when I brought mine up.
Saleem Stoudemire.
He's on Petey's list, by the way.
At U of A, the time JJ so was at Duke, his three-point percentage was better than JJ Redick's. He shot like 50.6% from three his senior year. And I was studying abroad my junior year of college. It was Saleem's senior year. And it was the team we had with Channing and Saleem and Hassan Adams. Iguodala was on that team. It was this legit team. And
I actually loved watching that team.
Oh,
for whatever,
well, who didn't?
I loved that team.
And they didn't quite get to where they needed to be until the Pac-12 tournament. And Saleem had a couple of sick shots. And then so we're studying abroad, but this is ridiculous. Golfers don't realize this. Basically, when you study abroad, you just go to screw around for 6 months. You don't really go to class or do anything. They gave us a 3-week spring break at the University of Westminster. 3 weeks.
Wow.
So we just got a Eurail pass and went around Europe for 3 weeks. Andrew Omer and I.
Must be nice.
We were checking in at hotels, getting up in the morning, checking to see because it was during the tournament.
Right.
We woke up when he hit a buzzer beater to beat Oklahoma State. And they were kind of making their way through the tournament. And of course, they run it Illinois, and it's one of the worst losses in college basketball history. And it's still a bummer. We were in Innsbruck, Austria, listening to it.
Were they up 12?
I think they were up 12 with 2 minutes to go.
Yeah.
and lost in overtime.
Petey gave me all kinds of notes to Raz.
Well, that Illinois team was so good.
Yeah, Darren Williams.
It was those two teams playing. It's the only things that the bummer about the tournament is sometimes you have the teams play and you wish it was later in the tournament.
But that's also the best part about the
tournament. It was an Elite Eight game. We were watching it in a hotel lobby on listening to it on Yahoo Radio because they didn't have streaming video at this time. Go ahead, insert your old person.
Hey,
joke.
No, you know what? You kind of just did it yourself.
And the guy that was letting us listen to it in the lobby asked us in kind of broken English at one point if we wanted celebratory beers because he kept asking, what's a rebound? What's an assist? He heard this stuff on it. And we're like all going nutty. And then they lose. And of course, we're like walk out all
dejected. You can drink sad beers.
And we're like, yeah, no, we're like, I will take the beers. Yeah. But Salim was so much fun to root for. And it was such a bummer that Salim wasn't a better pro. But that's my second pick. Again, I'm going out of order to go Salim since you went JJ.
My second, for whatever reason, I thought this guy was going to be the greatest basketball player ever. Emeka Okafor.
We were talking about this earlier on the phone.
He was so tall. He blocked absolutely everything. Like there was not a shot that you couldn't come in the room. He was one of the guys back when centers were a little bit more prevalent, where if he was in the game, whoever you had that was driving immediately couldn't do it anymore. Like it was over. And I loved like the defensive aspect of college basketball, especially because it's a little bit more, a bit heightened a little bit more. There's a little more energy, younger kids, so they're flying all over the place. But watching him come in the game was always fun for me.
He was the second pick after Dwight. Dwight obviously out of
horrible
out of high school.
I mean, I don't know what happened.
he was rookie of the year. He won rookie of the year in the NBA.
See, this is what's crazy. This is how your brain works. Like Vince Young made a Pro Bowl. Did you know that? And we all remember him as I remember Okafor.
Yeah, but the Pro Bowl thing is so hard to judge.
Come on, dude. You still...
Because they layer it and then quarterbacks don't play.
Yeah, he still made it, though.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's fair.
I mean, I'm just saying, I don't remember Okafor playing a game.
So Okafor won the NCAA championship in 2004. He was the Final Four MOP in 2004. He was co-player of the year that year as well. First team All-American.
Yeah.
He was so dirty. That UConn team was ridiculous. Good. So that's a good pick. I'm going to let you go with your third. I just was to say, when you said that to me on the phone earlier, I said almost the exact same. I was like, that guy was so dominant in college that he was a no-brainer in the pros. And it's just crazy it didn't work out.
I'm going to keep it in the family. Kemba Walker may simply be just because of his step back in the Big East Championship. It was like one of the coldest moves I've ever seen. It's nice to see somebody too that like this why also like with JJ Redick, like he's still really good. Like it's nice to see someone translate. He was fun to watch because him went straight into Shabazz Napier for like this like 6 year stretch of them playing. It was very fun for me. Again, like I like a little bit of the smaller guy because that's obviously more like my speed. So that he was so fun to watch. He made it look very easy and then in the tournament continued his run. So it was cool.
I was wondering if we'd have an overlap. Our first overlap.
Nice.
Kemba on my list as
good
well.
For us.
The Kemba run through the tournament
was as good as
is as legendary as anything that's ever happened in the tournament. Really, yeah. I mean, in my opinion, that team was not going to get into the NCAA tournament if they didn't win their conference championship.
And they also had like the worst national championship game I've ever watched ever. Like I think that they shot 30% and won. On the national
Well, team. You don't. They do that thing where they put them in those huge stadiums.
Yeah, Pete's told me it's actually really hard.
It's hard to shoot because it's so bad. It. You know what that is in the basketball? You know what the basketball broadcasting equivalent is to golf?
Give me it.
Is it's a lot darker out here than it looks on camera.
It is.
The broadcasters always talk
because
about
because they're all right, but it's just said too much.
They like, say it all the time.
You need to say it, but then you got to get out of it.
Kimba, I can't believe we have an overlap.
Who's
now I'm going to go a little before your time.
I mean, you already said Marcus Camby, dude.
Well, that was the oldest one I had. Steve Wojciechowski.
Okay.
Slapping the floor at Duke. I was a young kid. I thought he was so cool. This goes back to your point about JJ. I felt like I was kind to him and he was kind to me. If this guy can start at point guard for Duke, I can do it as well. I would go in my backyard and shoot like I was Wojciechowski. I loved him. By the way, weird professional moment of mine. I was calling a college basketball game last year and we had to fill time at the end of the game. It was over. And Wojo came over and sat
with us. Way,
and he was
rad.
Sitting in between. I can't remember who I was doing the game with, but he sat in the middle. And I just remember there was a moment I was like, Wojciechowski sitting? You know, it's one of those pincher moment kind of things, but then you've got to actually be professional.
And he's also like, listen, buddy, I'm not that big of a deal. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean,
exactly. It's not some crazy thing. Marquette.
It's like the guy from Parks and Rec who can dunk. He's like the first guy in Pawnee to like dunk. Like that. He's just like still like living off of that glory.
So Wojciechowski, Wojo.
I like that.
Was kind of the guy. He was a perfect example of what you're saying about JJ.
Who's your last one?
You got to go four.
I got to go four. Adam Morrison. So fun.
He was just on the outside looking out.
Most kind of heartbreaking loss, even though I've never really been a big Zags fan, but like, you know, West Coast, I watched all their games. He had the bouncy hair. He ended up playing for like the Lakers, so I got to watch him even more. He had the grossest mustache I've ever seen.
Was he the second pick?
Might have been.
Was he the second pick?
Although there's no way the Lakers that year had the second
pick. No. He wasn't the Lakers. I think he was a Bobcat.
Oh, he was the Lakers. You're right. He was a Bobcat. I think you're right. I think he was the second pick. You're right. They traded for him. He was just fun to watch. He was the guy who kind of like a third pick. So kind of like a Paul Pierce where, and like no disrespect at all. Like compared to all the other athletes just standing side by side, he and Paul, like they don't look super athletic, like fast, and they can jump high. They could obviously shoot or whatever. Adam is the guy. If he got out of the car and walked up to the court, you'd be like, "All right, like
I can play with this guy."
And then he like starts moving, and like I said, his hair is flying all over the place, and his little creepy mustache is kind of like fluttering.
Coming
in the wind.
From you,
it coming from I'm dude. I'm telling you, I get it.
You've got a Morrison stash going.
It's still creepy, but this is way thicker than his. But he was just fun to watch. He also didn't have the greatest team, and I seriously like he willed it. He willed it together, and he had a crushing end. But now I found him fun to watch. And my fifth one is, as we were doing this, I had my brain all locked into the kind of the 2000s growing up men's college basketball, and I almost forgot my all-time favorite college basketball player from the women's side, and also she is my favorite of all time, Maya Moore. Maya Moore was the most electric basketball player I've ever watched in college. I know she was on the best team. I understand there's a bit of it's a little easier to separate in women's college basketball, but watching her play was like watching Michael Jordan play to me. It was like poetry. Everything she did was so cool. Her form was amazing. She hit buzzer beaters. She had the most insane stats. And then I recently read about her that she isn't playing professional women's basketball right now because she found out somebody had gotten wrongfully convicted of a crime, and she spent the last 2 years of her life, and they just like won this case.
Right.
Like I know that's not even in college, but I love her even more for it. She was so fun to watch. She was like the epitome of pure. She's like watching like Adam Scott or something like that to me. It's just like as pure and silky as it gets. And if it was men's basketball, she would have gotten more hype than just about anybody
in the world. So my last, and I said to you, the Gus Johnson thing.
Yeah.
When Gus would call those Steph games.
Oh.
And Steph's he would,
I took him off my list a little earlier.
Yeah, when he would call those Steph Davidson games. What's wild about Steph? You know those pictures they show, those comparative pictures of Giannis before and after,
right.
And it's 70-pound different, right. Whatever. And Durant, now I know Durant's
but he's
stronger
changed,
and bigger than he was at Texas, but when you see those side-by-sides, it's not as drastic.
Yeah.
Steph at Davidson, when you go back and watch those highlights, and I think tonight or tomorrow,
yeah, they're running
CBS
it back.
Sportsnet's
yeah.
playing that Davidson-Gonzaga game where he scored 30 in the second half. He was hitting shots in that NCAA game.
I just watched the re-highlight
when he
reel.
Would catch the ball a couple times, he wasn't even, it's not he wasn't facing the basket. He was facing like the other basket.
He also was one pull. Of the all-time coolest, and this again, I might be misremembering this a little bit, but when he was leading the nation in scoring his senior year, they played some like kind of no-name team or like not great team, and the coach like quadruple teamed him for the entire game, and I don't think he scored, and they got crushed. Like obviously, all he has to do is pass it to somebody, and at the end of the game, they interviewed the coach, and the coach they said, "Coach, like what do you think about the game? Like that seemed like a weird thing." He goes, "Well, the leading scorer in the nation didn't score a point." And they're like, yeah, you lost by 40. And he just kept saying, like, the leading player in the nation, leading scorer in the nation didn't score a point. It was like kind of a funny, it was kind of the
on to Eric Cincinnati.
The Barry Bonds walk with the bases loaded to get a run up to. It was like, yeah, I'm just going to focus on one thing and I'm going to make that happen. And like, that's what they did against Steph. And that proved how good Steph was. And I also think with his changes, like, He wore the baggiest jerseys, which made him look even smaller.
How big were his shorts? How did you dribble? He looked like TJ Ford. Remember when Ford would wear those at Texas?
And Ty Lawson used to do that with his shorts. It would go all the way down to his ankles. It made him look just even shorter.
Like, by the way, we were talking fashion a little bit ago. That look in professional basketball, I'm just glad that's not here. And it'll probably make a comeback. But the baggy shorts was just brutal.
Baggy shorts is bad. Although Allen Iverson made it look cool.
Allen Iverson makes anything look cool. You know that.
All right. Do you want to... You asked me to give my best skill or talent that's not golf. Mine's horrendous.
I was asking you this because you're, again, we've talked about this, but you're a golf nut. You love golf. You love to play. You love to hit golf shots. You've got your putting mat laid out in your living room here. There's golf clubs everywhere.
I just bought a net.
Did you buy a net? So you're ready to go. You're gonna be locked in, eating that lob wedge on the island. You'll be fine.
I'm gonna cut into that really quick before I give my talent because I was just thinking about this. A lot of people, when we come back from this quarantine, golf wise, just like the average amateur, their handicaps go out the window, but they're still obviously intact. Some people are gonna be fleecing their friends because they're gonna be the guy with a launch monitor with time in the net, all of a sudden can practice, and other guys are gonna be like, haven't touched a club. They're gonna come back as a 7, their friend's gonna be a 10, and they're gonna be closer to a 5, and just for a week and a half,
for 2 weeks,
crush their buddies.
I asked on Twitter on Tuesday, I asked for people to send in what golf things they've bought during, you know, kind of the mandatory stay-at-home period. I couldn't believe how many launch monitors were mentioned.
Yeah.
Where are these people putting these things?
I have a couple.
I got to show you this picture when we get done. This dude had a towel draped against his garage door, hitting balls into
sketchy.
It. It was maybe 10 by 10 towel. I'm like, are you that good? Are you hit it that solid? I would break my garage door. I tried to do a trick shot yesterday. No. I didn't post it, for God's sakes. I tried to do this trick shot where I was bouncing it, and then I bounced it between my legs, but the first bounce was hitting it into a net across my yard. I almost broke my living room window. It hit the window.
It didn't break it.
But as it was in the air, you know that like 6 seconds of it being in the air and you're like,
oh yeah,
oh my
just
goodness.
Waiting for the noise.
Yeah, just this is going to be... I
so are you losing
stuff.
Speed in this quarantine? Like you would think usually you could putt it through a window with all the speed you've got.
Well, it was... It wasn't the sweet spot. It was a little toe-y.
Yeah.
It was a little toe-y.
Yeah,
it was a baby.
Meathead Shane, yeah. It didn't quite catch it all. Little spinny.
All right, so skill.
So I would say that most of my skills I do tie into golf. So I will say, like, I think that an actual skill I have is I'm an incredibly patient. Like, I can wait in a grocery store line forever without complaining. I'm pretty good at that. I mean, there are days I'm sure that people could say
What's the biggest you've ever flipped out at an airport, a grocery store? What's the most mad you've ever been about patience?
I truly don't think I have.
Does Lacey get mad like that?
Lacey's like, this is why I need her in all these situations. I'll just be sitting around or I'll just be standing in line, like doing nothing. And she'll see like a better way to be doing, you know, like a quicker way.
There'll be a new
it's
line.
Not like
opens.
She's more frustrated. She just like has a better idea than I do. And I'll just be like, I'm fine over
You'll
here.
You'll be like, is there a watermelon bubblicious? They make that now.
But see, I would tie that into golf. So I'm going to get off that. My best skill is I'm really good at spelling.
Okay.
I won the fourth grade spelling bee. A great story. My last word to win on was accommodate. And as I was spelling it, there's two C's, but there's also two M's. And I was watching my mom in the very back. And as I said the second M, I just saw her shake her head and look at my teacher. And then they said, like, right. And I was like,
nice.
What grade was this? Fourth grade spelling.
Fourth grade passed your mom.
Yeah. Sorry, mom. Sorry, mom. But that's always... Again, like I'm not, don't test me on this, but I am a pretty good speller. Like that's the one thing where Lacey be like, can you spell this? And I usually feel quite confident.
So when you type in your phone, which I mean, we all rely on.
There are certain words I will say, I'm like, oh.
But do you, I mean, are you typing them? Now, this also could be a finger thing, but are you nailing the spelling on the first
try? Oh, it's more of a finger thing. I usually know even like difficult words, like how to spell them. If my phone autocorrects, it's because my thumb, I have bad thumb.
So I didn't know this. I didn't know this was going to be your skill. But on the next episode, we're doing a Max Homa spelling bee challenge.
Yeah, see, this is where I worry that you're going to test me and I'm going to just completely botch it.
No.
I am pretty good.
Here's what we'll do. We'll do this for charity.
Okay.
We'll do 5 words. This is next. I'll give you time to think. We'll give 5 words. I'll have all of the stuff you need. I'll have definition.
See, that doesn't help me.
Okay. I'll use
advanced.
It in a sentence, all those things. If you get all 5, I'll donate X amount to charity.
Deal.
If you get 4, I'll donate 80%. You can donate 20%.
Three, I go.
We'll do
I
all
go.
That.
the worst word I ever lost on, it was in my fifth grade spelling bee. I lost on oboe.
Okay.
And I didn't hear, I thought he said hobo, which I didn't know was a word. So I gave him a weird look and I just said H-O-B-O. And he goes, no, O-B-O. And I'm like, what? And he, and I didn't know what it was to also, to be honest, but he's like, oboe, it's an instrument. And I'm like, that is the dumbest word. Like, I was so mad at the word. I wasn't mad at myself.
When you see an oboe, do you still get bummed
out?
Oh,
when I see the word, I'm like, oh, and it's a palindrome, which is sick. So yeah, it's like super.
Palindromes are always the best.
What is your best skill? Not golf.
You know,
not your voice. That would be cheating.
I think it's ping pong. I think it's table
tennis. No. You have to answer Papa Shot. You are not better at ping pong.
I'm better at ping pong than Papa Shot.
Are you serious? So, how are you not in the Olympics?
So I think my best skills are, I feel like I do pretty well in kind of a bar Olympics.
Yeah. So I've said this about Joe. Joe is the best at games you can't monetize.
Right. Exactly.
He's really good at ping pong. He's probably really good at Papa Shot. He's good at all these little quirky games where you're like, you're going to the bar and you're like, God, that guy's so sick. What does he do? And you're like, yeah, like he doesn't really have a job.
It's like the people that are awesome at foosball.
Yeah.
And you're like, where do you practice foosball if you don't have a foosball
table? They have a lot of time because they don't work.
I've played with a couple of buddies that are so good at foosball. So
good at ping pong is really cool.
But you know what? Ping pong is a brutal bar game.
Oh, yeah. It's not a bar game.
Because the ball hit people, like, get stepped on.
You need your own space.
You got to have it at your house.
Especially you probably bring your own paddles. It's the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure. I carry it with me everywhere I go. Do you know that Brad Faxon, when he was a younger person, Brad Faxon, who I work with and you know, and you've played with, Brad was like nationally ranked in ping pong.
That's sick.
Really good. And he says that, and I think he'd be comfortable with me saying this. I've asked him a couple times, in the current Ryder Cup format, Phil, Kucher, Jakobsen, all these guys get talked about. And he's like, I would murder.
Really? Because I've heard Jakobsen is really good. I know Berger's really good. I've heard Kucher, I've heard is really good. The funniest one ever. So Ben Am, Byung-hoon Ahn, he played on my college team for a year. His parents, South Koreans, they both won medals in ping pong in the Olympics. They both won medals. So one day we're at Brandon Hagee's house and he's got a ping pong table. So we start playing. I'm not bad at ping pong. I would never say I'm good at ping pong, but I can play ping pong. Like I'm a your normal ping pong player. So I play a game against one of my buddies. Another guy plays a game against another buddy. And finally we're like, Ben, don't you want to play? Like, I mean, his parents are like famous. He's like, oh, I don't play much ping pong. We're like, come on. Like, we're waiting. Somebody finally plays him. I think Michael Weaver played him. He's absolutely terrible. One of the worst ping pong players I've ever seen in my life. And I just I couldn't believe it.
Did you ask him, did your parents not?
Yeah, I mean, he just said that they didn't push it on. I mean, I truly still don't get it.
Yeah.
He's trash. Like, trash. He might be better now, but like, I never thought it would be like, it would just be like, you know, a Michael Jordan or a Ty. It would be like if Charlie Woods' swing stunk. Like, it was weird. It's not that I don't get it. It just didn't compute in my brain at the time. Because I'm assuming I'm not very good. And he's going to do like the thing where he holds it real cool and like is spinning it where I can't even touch it.
Right.
And he's like, no, but that's not very good. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I get it. Like, I'm sure that's not good compared to your parents. Like, this was like
you would beat him 21-8?
That. Yeah, I mean, Weaver and him had like the lamest game ever. But yeah, I mean,
it was like The Office. We always talk about The Office. Yeah.
I wouldn't put it on me to beat him, but like a decent ping pong player would smoke it. Okay. So it was kind of, I thought it was utterly
massively
shocking.
Surprised.
It was also a downer.
Very surprised.
I was looking forward to seeing something special.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. So while we keep this going, just as kind of, there's not a lot of things happening in our golf world right now. I have been asked this question a lot, and I wanted to give these out. These are 5 golf book recommendations. And if you've read any of these, do you read golf books?
I've read a few golf books.
Okay. So these are 5 golf book recommendations because I've been asked a few times on social media from different people. And I'm just going to give them out because it's a time where everybody's at home and they're trying to read. First one is kind of a layup. I'm sure you've read it. If you haven't, you got to do it today. The Match, Frost, 56 Match, Byron Nelson, obviously, you know. Hogan, Ward, Venturi, Cypress Point. Book's awesome. One of the best golf books of all time. One of the craziest things ever to be a part of if you were there.
I
can imagine.
That one and it's all time. I got my father-in-law that book.
Can you name who they recreated the Match 2 with?
Tiger, Phil, and Shane Bacon.
No. They did this. They did this.
Did they actually do
they
it?
They recreated
at
it.
At Cyprus?
They I think it was at Cyprus.
I don't know.
So it was Bubba, Ricky.
Jason Day?
No, I'm trying to think of who the... Because I know Fred Couples was supposed to be a part of it, and I think he pulled out, and Nick Watney was in. And I can't think of who the fourth was. But though I know those three.
Usually when people ask, do you know who they did the
well,
thing?
Well, I never know. I never know anything. The other four. Let's see. Well, I know, but I knew that Nick Watney's the one that...
Nick Watney's very good friends with Sam Reeves, who is a humongously influential man up in the Monterey Peninsula. He lives on number 8 at Cypress Point, so I bet you.
Modern day, here we go. So modern, they called it the modern day match, not match two. And this was Alan Shipnuck, who I think snuck out and covered this, and I'm not even sure he was supposed to be out there covering it. And he was like, sure, why not? Watney, I was right about.
Congrats.
Bubba, Ricky.
Wow.
And
3 for 4. You still can't find the fourth name.
Davis Love.
Oh.
So it was supposed to be Davis Love and Couples.
Okay.
Bubba and Ricky.
That's a really cool idea.
Couples
and that
back
book is all
was struggling, right? So they brought Nick Watney.
What's your other book?
So that's the first one. Sorry, I'll roll through these kind of quick. Chasing Greatness is awesome, about Johnny Miller, Arnie, Oakmont. I read that before the Oakmont US Open. A lot of information, a lot of good stories in there. Freddie and Me is great. Trip Bowden. Awesome. Dives into old Augusta National, caddy situation, untold stories. You'll love it. Trust me. If you can find it, Golfer's Gold by Tony Lima is an incredible golf read. And my last is anything from my boy Tom Coyne. But if you're going to start with something, I would go with a course called Ireland. But if you want to really start with something, go with Paper Tiger and then go into Ireland. But any of Coyne's books are great and interesting. But I think if he was going to suggest one, I think he'd probably say read a course called Ireland. And if you ever go to Ireland with Tom Coyne, I've heard from the No Line Up Boys,
it literally looks
like
so
going,
sick.
It's like going somewhere.
I feel like I can't go now.
Superstar.
Like, yeah, I feel like it's going to... Watching their video on Tour Sauce was like one of the coolest moments for me because I've never been over there. And then seeing that they get to go with him, I felt like everything I do after this is just like not going to be cool.
No, not at all. So last thing we're going to do.
We got a couple things.
What am I missing?
I got to do my... youth competition stories.
Let's get into that. I want to hear that.
Questions for Shane.
Oh, so let's. You're running.
And
right
then
now.
Our one-time major.
Okay, I want you to run with your two.
Okay, I'll go quick.
No. Don't go quick. We got plenty of time. Okay. We got all the time in the world. This isn't an hour and a half yet.
Youth competition stories. Shane asked you for a couple.
Well, I asked you. I wanted to know. You know, you so your youth golf.
Youth golf's so funny.
but you were you big AJGA guy?
No, I mean, yeah, I played
local California stuff.
I played the local AJGA stuff.
Okay.
One time my mom got so fed up with me playing against the same really great Southern California golfers that we scrambled some money together, flew all the way to Chicago, played an event. It was actually kind of funny. I thought I didn't play very well and I got third, and we flew home thinking, man, people in California are really good at golf because like I've just been getting drummed. So yeah, I wasn't big on it. AJGA is so expensive. Most families struggle with it. I don't know if it's gotten any cheaper, but it is, you do need to play it. Not need, but back then at the very least, you kind of needed to dabble in it to get a scholarship to college. So it was a bit of an investment. So, did play, love the AJGA. They do a phenomenal job. It's legitimately as close to a tour event as you can imagine.
We were joking about, yeah. Well, I played in some AJGA stuff, and when you got those towels,
oh, you fell on top
they
of
were
the world.
Gold. Yeah. When you got the name tag with your year in it, you know, Patrick Reed.
Right.
His,
right.
Does he have his daughter or son?
Not sure.
It's his kid.
Yeah,
he has
cool.
He keeps
it's like
that
a
on
future.
The, it's a cool thing he has on his
sick.
Golf bag. But you'd get those, and it was your high school graduation
right.
year, and that was cool.
And then
rock.
You looked at everybody saying, "Okay, are you going to be my competition for a scholarship? Are you going to be my
right?"
Yeah,
but the towels were
cool.
They were gold.
So, but my two stories are from high school. So my first favorite, it was either my freshman or my sophomore year. Freshman year, I think. We had this thing called the Newhall Cup. That was the city cup we all grew up in, Newhall. And we got to play the TPC, or it used to be TPC Valencia, which was like one of the nice courses around. And we got to play it back-to-back days. And it was like this kind of big deal with all the teams in our little league. So six teams. One of my best friends growing up in like... our families are super, super close. Was on the team. He was the guy who ran out of gas and made me pay for the gas with like $1.03. He was on the team and he's a pretty good golfer. Never really like kind of clicked for him, but he hit it a mile, whatever. He just struggled to score. So we're playing this thing, and first of all, it is raining so hard in Southern California. I mean, I'm talking like we're in the Midwest. Like, it's dumping all day. And all day we're waiting for them to call it. And it's funny. Like, I'm watching somebody in my group about to chip, and there's just a puddle in their way, like an enormous puddle. Coach starts driving by, and we look over, and we all kind of said to ourselves, like, finally, like, they're going to call it. And he just waved and kept driving. So we finished. I mean, most of us weren't prepared. I don't have rain gear. I'm 14 years old. I live in Southern California. So one of the kids in my group.
You're soaking wet.
Soaked. One of the kids in my group had on shorts and a t-shirt and a visor at the turn, walked into the, it's a nice place, walked into the bathroom and took one of the small towels and just put it on his head under his visor. A kid in the group behind us apparently, club slipped out of his hands on 13 and flung onto what the five freeway is over his corner. I'm sure it didn't get to the freeway, but just over the fence, that's gone forever. So we end up getting called for darkness, not rain, just nice. So everybody knows. And I'm walking in and Chris is up in the fairway on 18. 18 is the hardest hole in the course, right? He hits the fairway. It is dark, darker than the cameras made it appear. And he hits the second shot and it's going right. It's a really long second shot. Like, it's a 4 or 5 or 9, but he was like 1 under par, like killing it, maybe 2 under par. Killing it. And like I said, he struggled to score and he's pretty happy. And I'm just kind of watching him finish. Well, we get up there and lose the ball in the dark. Like, can't find it. And it just sucked. It sucked. So he had to finish on one, actually, so because it was a shotgun. So he finishes, makes double. He's pretty mad. But now he's, you know, one hole to play, even or one over. Still, like, would have been one of his best rounds. Would probably be leading the dang thing. Well, then in the morning, gets up on one. One's a pretty easy hole if you hit the fairway. Hits it down there, has lob wedge in classic high school form, gets halfway down on his downswing, and the grip spun on his club, and his club essentially was upside down, and he just hit it dead off the hosel, straight out of bounds with the lob wedge. So he finished double, triple, or triple double, or whatever it was. Ends up shooting like his normal 77, 78, and he's not a guy who gets too mad because he never wanted to play golf professionally. He didn't really want to do it in college. I've never seen him like this. And then he has to go play his other 18 holes that day. I mean, he was upset.
Did the club come out of play with the grip? Grip slippage?
Listen, who cares?
I know.
That's high school was like, people would steal drivers at people's bags.
So great.
But yeah, I don't know. I'll ask, because now he works for the NCGA, so this could be a violation of his, I don't know the statute of limitations, but he might get fired over this if he kept the club in play. My other one was my senior year, all of my friends.
How'd you do in that? Do you remember how you played?
Not well, but we had a teammate, Lewis Amira, who I think works for Google now, super smart guy, went to Harvard, played on their golf team, was a stud, and I think he won. He was unreal. Like, he was like 10th in the country, like in AJGA stuff. Like, it was awesome to watch. I think he won. I played terrible. I was so bad my freshman year, but it was fun. We got to play the nicest course in the area.
What would you shoot, like, throughout your high school? What would you shoot? I mean, not your scoring average, unless you remember that, which would
no,
be really
I don't.
Weird.
I mean, in my senior year, I was shooting under par.
So, but like when you
but
were
my
freshman
year, I mean, if I
shoot
shot
79?
Under par, I mean, everyone on occasion, I guess, right. But I mean, I would shoot between 75 and 70 ish, maybe 77 and 70 ish. Like, I'd have my days, but I'm sure where I've shot.
See,
80.
But like where I grew up, that would have won every.
Yeah. So that Southern California is
crazy
really
good.
Tough, man.
Well, that's like the Carson Daly thing where he grew up playing against Tiger and
sure.
He quit because he goes.
Sure. I've heard that a lot of times.
Everybody's got one of these guys.
You have to. That's why my mom's move to go to Chicago for 1 week was actually helpful because you need to think you're kind of good.
Right.
So fast forward to senior year. Yeah. So that was freshman year. Fast forward to senior year. Most of my friends had been off the team. Now, I had obviously a few still on the team, but the team was getting younger. I was always friends with like a couple older, and even the other guys in the league. My like future roommate had like just graduated. So now I'm kind of felt like I was a little on my own. I butted heads real bad with our head coach. We did not get along. Didn't like him. So we get to our like little state championship run, our first round in our high school, as great of players as we honestly did have coming through. It's a pretty cool list of like D1 players. Our high school had never made it out of the first round of the whole state championship run. So we get to the golf course. I get in a fight with my coach because he brought a player. I thought I wanted the other kid to come, and we had talked about it. And he kind of said he just made up a lie, essentially. So I was pissed, and my team was not very good. You know, we got to that, but we weren't gonna be anything. So I get out there. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna do me. I'm gonna play my best and just try to win like this first round or whatever. And I play awesome. So I'm coming up 18, and you know, again, it's like a shotgun. So I was playing, I think, the one player. So I start on one, finish on 18. And 18, you go up this hill. I'm walking up. I played really, really well. And I'm walking up happy with myself. And as I'm like cresting this hill, I see my team huddled together. And then I see them see me, and I see them start putting their hands up in the air cheering. And I'm like, oh no, like, did we just make it? Because I don't want to be around anybody anymore. I'm over it. Like, I'm over my coach so much. I just want to be done. and they're cheering, and then they start like running towards me. And I'm like, oh no, what have I done? Like, I wanted to sign a wrong card. I was regretting trying at all. And of course, for the first time ever, we make it through. And it was cool to be that like part of that team, but at the same time, I didn't really care. I mean, it's high school. Like, right. I didn't care that much. I had a couple buddies on the team, so that was cool to have one more week with them, but I couldn't do the... And I also... The real reason, too, is the next round was going to be so embarrassing. We weren't good enough. We're going to play a harder golf course, so we go to a new golf course the next week or whatever. And I am... Now the kids that I've told my team about, we're playing with. Like, the kids I know, like Hagee's there, who ends up being on my Cal team. Like, the kids I know I'm going to be playing Pac-12 golf against.
Right.
The golfers are there. I'm like, oh boy. So we go and it's a tough day. I played okay, but not well, like one over. It was windy. And you just know, like, we had never been to this course before. It's going to beat us up. Well, we come in and, you know, the other scores and some of the teams, like I said, in SoCal are a joke. So we are definitely not making it through the round, but everyone's just trying to like not be embarrassed. And one of the kids comes up to me and goes, it's 6-5 in high school, right? So he comes up to me and goes, yo dude, like, I'm sorry, but I shot 91. And I'm like, hey, man, like, no worries. Like, we're going to drop it. It's all good. Whatever. Well, next kid comes in and goes, dude, I'm sorry. I shot 91. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, I didn't want to see a 91 on my team's board. I mean, we sit around. Coach makes us, like, watch the whole, like, ceremony. I'm like, get me the hell
right
out of here.
Yeah, I'm
like,
done.
I'm looking at my friends. Like, I'm so embarrassed to be here. And I didn't play great either. So it's not like I have, like, anything to brag about. I'm like, get me out of this situation. But that was high school golf in a nutshell to me, both being funny and, like, the high school teams. Especially in Southern California, you had teams that had the Ricky Fowlers and Josh Andersons and all these guys. And then you had the teams like mine, which we had, I mean, pretty impressive, like three guys go play college golf. But in general, like, the rest of the guys are just doing it because they want to do it for fun and get out of, you know, PE.
Yeah, Ricky was pretty good at that age.
Oh my God. This story, we used to read the newspaper with his scores. It was a joke. And the crazy part is the second best player on that team was unbelievable. Josh Anderson went to Pepperdine and was like probably an All-American or near it. I mean... And Rick used to just drum him.
You told me that they as a team one time shot
10 under.
Shot 10 under as a team.
I think they took like an 80 or something absurd. I mean, Ricky fairly consistently shot between 64 and 62 in high school. Like, it's a joke.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. I asked for some questions. I don't think we're going to have time to get into a lot of questions today, but I did get a question. Sorry for whoever asked us. We love you and appreciate you. Thanks for listening to the podcast. What's the lowest score to par you've ever shot? Ask both of us.
What's yours?
I think it was 9.
Nice.
I think I shot 62 twice.
Is that
the same
9?
Year.
Is that 9 under 62?
One was 8. I know one was 8, and I believe one was 9.
You just have so many you can't remember.
Only twice, and it was the same year, and I never shot it again. That was mine.
That's pretty good. Where was it?
Ocotillo or Ocotillo if Nick Woodruff's here.
mine.
Have you played Ocotillo before?
I have not.
It's Southern
Phoenix.
I haven't
even played Ocotillo.
You haven't even played Ocotillo? No, wow.
So I haven't got to play either.
Really, really. Yeah. 27 holes. It's whatever.
I shot on like the combo tees at Valencia Country Club. So like the very backs and then the one ups. I shot 12 under.
60?
Sweet, yeah. Had a bunker shot for the 5-9. I don't know if it would count. I mean, the course at the Blues is 6,800 and the Golds is like 7,300. So I don't know what the combo would come out to. I mean, it would have been over 7,000 yards, but or near 7,000 yards.
59 is 59.
It didn't matter. I played really, really well.
But yeah, awesome. Obviously.
It was
Thank
awesome.
You.
Like, it was a fun day.
News breaking.
It was
Do
sick.
Me a favor. When you shoot 59 on the tour for
I don't
the first
know
time,
if it's possible.
Please don't say in your interview, I played really well today.
Okay. I don't really get how people do it. I'm not going to lie. Like that day, I could not miss.
But you've gone low already. I mean, you've gone low on tour. I mean,
yeah, I've gone low. I mean, what's crazy is my best round ever was 200 at Bay Hill.
what's your low round on tour? Have you shot 62?
I shot 63 at Wells Fargo, and I shot 63 at the Sony before. I don't think I've shot 62. I don't know if I've broken 63 in all pro golf. I have at home. I have shot, like, I shot 62 at Wisprock and Silverleaf. Which is 10 under.
That's
pretty. So those are pretty
30.
Good.
Those are
yeah,
both,
tour,
for people that don't know, those are both desert golf tour, courses, so yeah, you really can't miss, yeah. You can't miss a golf shot all day.
Tour's tough. I shot 9 under at a Marsh Landing with Solly and Joe and all the
That's
milling
right,
up with Neil and Tron.
You,
and I hit a iron out of bounds. I hit a mega fan and it hit a cart path and just ejected up to somebody's house.
And you shot what?
I shot 9. I played really good that day too, if you're wondering. But here, I have my questions to you. These give me joy. These days, like this is what I live for. So I come up with like my most clever-ish would you rather type situations for Shane. So Shane, I only have 4 this time. Over under 4.5 plays at running back in the NFL before an injury.
For sure under.
Under, okay. I was wondering where you're going because I have this conversation with my buddies a lot, and we always say how much money to just run down the sideline in full pads, run down the sideline at your full speed, and Terrell Suggs in his heyday is running at you, but you can't go out of bounds. Like, how much money would I have to pay you? So you don't have to answer that one. But this one, I'm glad you said under because I believe that if somebody's helmet hits my shin, I'm out for a year. Like that, they don't talk about how that must hurt enough.
What I don't understand is when the running back has the ball and the defender hits some helmet into their arm.
Oh, and they're okay.
How is your arm not just?
Because they have muscle on muscle on
muscle. It's just unreal. So you said Terrell Suggs. You know my buddy Andrew?
Yeah.
He's got a twin brother, identical twin brother, Matt Omer.
I thought it was Terrell.
And Matt played football at Dobson. And Suggs played football, I think, at Hamilton.
That's not fair.
And he said he played safety or corner or something. And Suggs would play running back and linebacker and everything, right?
That's cool.
And he said he would come around the side and I asked Matt, what do you do? And he goes, you would just dive kind of at their legs and hope that you missed. It was, you hoped you missed the tackle.
Yeah, you hope his knee doesn't hit your helmet.
It's ridiculous. Those are those things I think, we talked to Marcus Camby, talked Shaq. There are people in sports that you kind of think have a chance to be great.
Yeah.
The good shooters. I mean, everybody has one at their high school that they think is a football player, basketball player, whatever. And you're like, that guy could be pro.
Yeah.
And rarely does it ever work out.
Sure.
And then I'm sure there are people where you grew up and you're like, no. Yeah.
If this guy
can't make it, he's going to play professional sports.
That's what my mom used to say about Ricky. She was always like, because he's 2 years older than me and he turned pro 2 years into college. And my mom always said, so that would give me like a 4-year buffer on him. She said, Max, if Ricky doesn't make it, I'm not sure this is for you. Because I don't know if I beat him one time my entire life going into college golf. So it was really cool to see him succeed early because I needed that. I needed to know
he was in a playoff his like first professional
first year,
event,
him,
right?
Jamie Lovemark, it was and of course Troy Madison wins of like you have these two guys that
it was
like,
him and Lovemark, right?
Lovemark and Madison at Greyhawk. Yeah, and Lovemark's ball bounced out of the water and jumped back onto the rough. And Scob's stories are so funny because he told Ricky, he goes,
was
he hit Scob in the water.
Caddy and then?
Yeah,
first event. Yeah. Wow.
And he said Ricky hit in the water. And Ricky's like, well, why is everybody kind of cheering or whatever? He goes, I don't really know. And like, of course, Joe's probably like, yeah, because they're all rooting for me. But the ball literally lands in, must have hit a rock or one of the cement things and hops right back out. But I got my second question. I'm actually curious about this one. Real curious.
You're an under on that too, right?
Oh,
4.5 under. we're having to play football.
One, yeah. Yeah. I'm screwed. Because if I hope I get the ball, because if I have to block, I'm even more screwed.
Wait, done.
You have 4 feet to win the Masters. Would you rather putt it with your wedge or a righty putter? I'd like this question.
That's a great question. 4 feet to win the Masters. I think I'm gonna go righty putter.
Okay. I feel like with the nerves, the wedge would be really difficult to like hit middle, you know, like to center the ball. Like you could just do the straight up whiff and be like, what did I do?
And you're like, just look back and you kind of got the Zach Johnson look at 13 where what is the play here?
Yeah, what do I do? Okay, back to Augusta.
That's a great question. What do you think your answer would be?
Lefty putter. I'm pretty good lefty.
Okay.
Putter. Actually, although I will say that I lied. I'm going to go with the belly. I do have to belly wedge a lot on tour. So I bet you I'd probably
why do you have to do it a lot? Do you miss a lot of greens?
I miss a lot of greens. Well, I don't miss them by a lot, but I miss them right in those spots.
You're really good at 2 yards off the
green. I don't miss a lot of irons too far offline, except if I hit them out of bounds with Sully. But when I usually miss a green, it'll just roll right up against color. So I get pretty good at
this. This should be your playing lesson with a pro if you ever do it. Just 30 minutes of you bellying wedges.
I should, because I also used to be super nasty at the toe down putter from the VJ. That's my best skill in golf, but now I have a putter that isn't conducive.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
I made like a 50 footer one time.
Did you really?
It was like Joe's favorite thing I could do.
You made it in a tournament.
In college, yeah. I made it in Pasatiempo. I made a 50 footer on the back of a par three on five. It was so
you would, it was when you were up against the rough, you would just kind of back down, like, toe it. Like
it's basically
VJ did
why
it.
People belly. And now bellying is probably more a better idea, but so I crazy. Used to just be really good.
One of the more underrated golf shots in the history of any tournament
so
golf when VJ made that one.
Especially given
16.
The moment. I mean,
for eagle.
Yeah. So I'm going wedge.
Okay.
Back to Augusta, 18 of Augusta. You have a 2-shot lead. You can only use one club for the entirety of the hole. What club are you picking?
2-shot lead.
So you need a bogey to win.
I need bogey to win. Augusta.
Now I'm gonna. So I've thought of all these before, obviously, because okay. I've made them up. I have a couple schools of thought for this. You obviously can't use a wood because that would be right. stupid. But I was thinking.
I mean, you could use a wood. Wait, now you're.
Right, use a wood.
There's not an addendum to your game.
I hope I'm the one that's two behind you because I just won the Masters. I kind of think that you want to club with a lot of lofts because they're easier to, I guess not easier, but those are the ones you practice the bellying with and the putting with. And you could kind of hit, like I thought, like maybe an 8-iron and then pitch another 8-iron to your 8-iron number where you would most likely hit the green with the third. And then you just have to 2-putt.
It's really, really
smart. Not a bad idea.
It's pretty advanced.
Because you don't want to chip. Like your idea is not to have to chip.
Right.
So getting in two with 5-iron, 5-iron, could work or whatever, but I don't know if you get there 5-iron, 5-iron.
That's what I was thinking was 5-iron. I was thinking if I smoked 5-iron off the tee, I might be able to get on the green with a 5-iron.
My issue is if you miss the hit it in a bunker with a 5-iron, you lost. You're pretty done. And I mean, you're not done, but you're in a bad spot.
You're going to have a hard time making 5.
Yeah, that's kind of...
So, you know what? It's funny. You talked me out of my decision that you didn't know I was going to go with into a decision I think I'm going to go with. I think I'm going to go 7-iron and go...
I think it's the smart
and
one.
Hit 7-iron hard off the tee.
Because you could putt with a 7-iron.
But what else you could do is, if you hit a... Like, say you're just trying to... Like, for me, I'm just trying to rip hook a 7-iron. I'm, like, aiming it, like, where Bryson hit it
yeah.
when he was an AM with speed.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to rip hook it off the left rough, or the left trees. Say I have 240, and I'm like, all right, if I hit this thing 195 up there on the right side, I could almost bump and run it up
you
kind
could,
of the DeMarco
yeah.
line.
But I think that's going to be a really hard shot because then you could run it to the back of the green and then be in a real
and that'd be a two,
in a real
but you
spot.
Get 3-putt.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I think I'm going to go 7-iron.
Okay.
I think I'm going 7.
It gives you more options.
Here's my question. I wonder, and where's your Augusta Yardage book? I wonder how far it is from
wow.
the
real low blow
from the pro tee to the fairway.
Remember that Feel Good Friday? You just broke me in half.
What do you think?
Because it can't be.
It's pretty
but they don't
far.
Have rough at Augusta. I mean, right?
But you've got to be. So the tee, the pro, I mean, these pro tees are so.
So then I'm back. Telling you, then you just pitch it to, or get your number to a 7-iron number.
But like the tee goes up and then it goes down and then it kind of comes back up. I'm just making sure that if
you
I hit 7-iron, I don't want to be caught down there in something. But I think you're okay.
That's fair.
Great question.
I wouldn't know.
Love the question.
Last question. I stole this from Twitter. I manipulate a little bit. 25 points, 10 rebounds, and 15 assists for an entire season in the NBA. You play all 82 games. You get 20 minutes a game. If you do that throughout the whole season, you accumulate those points, rebounds, and assists. You get $250 million. If you don't, you die. Do you take it on? Did you not read that one on Twitter this week?
No.
I still have been mulling it over. I don't think I could do it.
Wait. So just say it again.
You have to score over the course of 82 games, 20 minutes a game. The rest of the league does not know about this bet, so they will not help you. Your team won't help you. Like they're playing you
like
they're
I'm
supposed
NBA
to.
Player.
Yeah. Now they might come off you. That's the only point I think I could do with the points part is if they keep coming off me, I could make 9 threes in a
right.
season.
Shoot some step
but
level.
But still, maybe I don't. So 25 points, 15 assists, and 10 rebounds accumulated. $250 million offered to you, or you die. Do you take the risk? The assists, I think, is the easiest. You could honestly probably give me 30 assists and I'll get it because they're so good at shooting.
The rebounds,
the rebounds, I think, is impossible.
The rebound would be so here's what you could do. You could cheap it. I'd say I'm going to do it. I'd do it. And here's why. I'm with you on the points. I mean, I'm playing on the team. They have to play me 20 minutes. It's part of the rule.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I can.
The points are tough, too, though. Yeah, right.
But you could Damien a few threes and hopefully they go in. And that would be all you'd practice. You'd be at practice.
Half court.
You'd be at practice and you'd be with LeBron and AD and all these guys. And you're just jacking up half court threes the entire practice.
Yeah.
And you would try to get good at that.
I would love to know if like in this old like fake world of this kind of would you rather, if let's just say they inbound you one time and you just chuck one from half of like the rest of your 20 minutes, they don't pass it to you because they know what you're trying to do. Like that would be a small wrinkle. Like you kind of have to make the first one.
You're not going to get the ball back because you're not going to get a steal. Yeah. You're not going to get a rebound in traffic. So you're not going to touch the ball.
The rebound has to be a long.
So the
long
other thing
rebound.
I'm going to do is that I would, right when I got on the team, I would figure out from someone what the coach's favorite stuff is. Is it's favorite bottle of wine? Anything nice. And I would pound that. I'd buy him a few bottles. And I would always suggest to him, hey man, I would love to shoot the technical free throws. That's how I would go with it. So
hey,
I would.
Hey man, I know we have JJ Redick on the team, but this would mean a lot to me. My mom's here.
But that would be my thing, and I would work on that craft. Between half court shots and free throws, that's all I would do at practice.
How nervous would you be for the fun to make 25 game 82 and tech? You somehow convinced, not somehow, you basically blow Draymond Green's elbow and he gets a technical foul because he freaks out and coach says, all right, Bacon, you're up. And you're like, I don't know if I want.
Do you know how many times you'd flop? Do you know how many times you would flop?
I'd be Patrick Beverly. Maybe Patrick Beverly has this bet. This actually makes a lot more sense.
I don't know. Beverly's three looked great this year for until obviously basketball stopped, but it was, that was kind of the X
what a
factor.
Bummer if this happened and then the Corona came and
you didn't die from Corona.
You just died
because you didn't get your number.
Begging for the season to come back.
Oh man, I love this thing though. $250 million if you do it. So you basically 82 games. You have to score. If you hit any three, you're on a good trajectory.
It's gonna be a long three over tall men.
There was a guy. There was this kid named Rob that I went to college with. You don't know this Rob. And he was 6'7" or 6'8". Have you ever tried to score basketball over a quick guy that's literally the least fun thing
in the world? Because they can be 4 feet from you and block it.
Every time.
they're 8 feet there.
They're all standing with their arms. It's just no fun. Yeah, and so when you're playing, but just so you know, and this is going to be a little bit of a spoiler, but Rob, not NBA level talent. So those guys are going to be quicker and better. That's a great question.
Thank you. That was my segment. I don't think I could do the rebounds. I think I could finesse my way into the point somehow, but I don't think I could get 10 rebounds in a season. My point is I could, but I'm not going to take that risk because I think that it would be more way more luck than skill at all.
You'd be the Carmelo though. If you could Carmelo your way in and just yell at people that you got that on team, that's how you could get it.
I don't know if I could yell loud enough for it to get all the way up to their ears.
Do you know what's a really weird thing about me besides the other weird stuff you know about me is that when I watch sports, I think about useless stats all the time. When guys get useless rebounds or when they don't shoot before the buzzer and shoot right after, I always think about the stat portion of that.
Yeah, so that's what's interesting is without sports, I've been watching all these reality TV shows with my lovely wife, and I'm doing it too. I'm just saying how many times, Teresa said like the B word over the course of an episode, and now that's where my stats are going. By the way,
I like how you edit yourself.
I didn't know if we were allowed to swear on this.
No, this is a real positive episode. Cool. No cussing on this episode.
No cussing.
You're good. All right, last thing we're going to do, we'll make it kind of quick because we're going long, shocking.
Honestly, I'm going to say this because we're already long. I don't really care. I listened to 8-7 podcasts today, and I would have loved for a 2-hour podcast.
I thought you were saying you didn't care about what we were about to do.
I just don't care if you guys think it's too long or in the quarantine.
You can stop listening to it.
Yeah.
So here we go.
You're a little beast.
We've talked a lot about not golf. So this is our lone golf portion of the podcast. I wanted to ask you who you felt was the best player in the history of golf that has won only one and exactly one major title. And I'm going to list just some of the names that make up this list. The first person on the list, Andrew Stratt, 1865.
Please tell me we're not doing all of
them. No. I'm just going through. So I've got a list.
I had him on my fantasy team.
You did?
Yeah.
He was a stud. Yeah, so Travers, We Met, is on the list. As I'm scrolling through, Lawson Little, Fred Daly,
Weisskopf,
Tommy Bolt, Finsterwald, Tony Lima, who I've already mentioned on this podcast.
Wow, he's great getting book. A lot of run today.
He's getting pretty good.
Lima's going to have a great day tomorrow.
Jerry Pate, Lanny Watkins, as we get a little bit more modern. You said Weisskopf, obviously a name to talk about here. Larry Mize, Tom Kite, Zinger,
it's
Corey
pretty
Pavin.
Stacked.
Davis
winning two
Love
majors
third,
is hard.
Mike Weir, Jim Furyk, just one. And then we get into some of the modern guys. And this is I've called this era this for a long time. I feel like this is the era of one-time major winners. You've got Webb Simpson. You've got Justin Rose. You've obviously got Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Gary Woodland, Molinari. And the last to do it was Shane Lowry last year as the last lone guy.
Your brother, Shane.
Shane. A lot of Shanes in that. There was a moment during a broadcast one time where Shane O'Donohue threw it to me interviewing Shane Lowry, and I made a Shane joke, and nothing from Lowry.
Nothing, really?
I said, wow, there's way too many Shanes to be involved in this, and it was just crickets.
Wow.
And I
just kinda...
kept on with the interview. It was a great moment in my career. We'll find video of that and show it to you. So,
what a Shane move.
Thank you. So I asked our friend, and shout out for all the help, Justin Ray, 15th Club. If you don't follow him, he's one of the best followers in all of golf.
He's almost always right.
Can we just go ahead? I want you to get into it.
I read his stat a year or two ago.
I want you to talk about how much respect you had for him and now where he's
at. He's like, he is my Wikipedia. Like, everything he says is true, and it usually always is. I go to Torrey this year, number 8. I tell Joe, hey, did you know that in all the times Tiger has ever played the 8th hole at Torrey Pines South, he's never made a bogey? He said, no way. And I said, yeah, Justin Ray, you know, tweeted about it, and it's always right. And then we go do this watch party, and I'm making jokes about, I brought it up, making jokes about how, we know he's not going to make a bogey on this one. What'd he do? He made a bogey just because it was the playoff of the 08 US Open. And now, you know, my entire world is crumbling in front of me.
It didn't count because it was a playoff?
Unofficial round.
That's the most, that is the most important round.
Yeah. I don't blame Justin.
I'm not going to Justin.
No.
I'm going to whoever makes that an unofficial stat. Silly. So, outside of that one time he messed up, he's the leader in stats, and you should follow him and check their website all the time. It's awesome. So I asked him for just a little bit of information on this. Who do you think has the most top 10 finishes in major championships of the players that have just one major title?
Oh, that's impossible to answer, but I'm going to say...
I mean, you'll
Kite.
That's the answer.
I'm a genius.
You're so good.
God, I'm
27. Top 10s
in majors. You
gotta
be kidding me.
That's
gotta
hurt. Outside of the Pebble win.
That's
27.
That's up there in Jack Nicklaus territory for the seconds and thirds.
Fred Couples, 26, is right there.
So Fred was high on my list.
Okay.
All encompassing, Fred Couples is like one of the goats of, like, he would be on like the extended Mount Rushmore of professional golfers just for what he's done for golf.
But
he didn't quite make my favorite.
If the PGA Tour played Augusta National 10 times a year, he would have 450 wins.
Yeah, his poor back would be so sore.
His back would be really, really sore. So, top five finishes. Kite is second with 16. Furyk is 16. Lloyd Mangrum is first, 17. He is very much in the conversation here. 25 top 10 finishes with just one major.
If you hear the name Lloyd, do you think of anything other than, no, it's a cardigan, but thanks for asking?
Yeah,
that's
always,
all I can
always, think. Always. It's always Dumb and Dumber. That's one of those names I feel like they don't come around a lot.
No.
So this guy, I wanted to throw this at you because he also might have the best golf nickname of all time. Lloyd's nickname, Mr. Icicle.
Yeah, that's sick. That's sick.
Unbelievable.
Is it because he was ice cold or?
Known for his smooth swing and relaxed demeanor on the course. Maybe you should be
so Mr. He's like Henrik, Iceman.
What if you were Mr. Icicle too?
Yeah.
You need a golf nickname.
Yeah, I could take a golf nickname.
You're okay with that?
Yeah, people pretty much lately have just been calling me the Yeti or whatever.
So he won.
Sort of gorilla.
So Lloyd won the 46 U.S. Open in a playoff.
God, I was grinded that one too.
We love playoffs. He shot rounds of.
So is this your pick?
No.
I've never seen anybody dive more
74,
into
74, 70,
Lloyd
68,
Mangrum.
72, three-way playoff, and he beat the likes. Excuse me.
Shane is on a wormhole on the internet right now, and he can't get out of it.
Whole playoff.
That's my nightmare.
They had a 36-hole Monday
nightmare.
Playoff. Unreal.
We will not be rebroadcasting that.
He shot 70.
Shane,
he
no
shot 72,
cares.
72. He shot even par. Same score as when he woke up in the morning. He played 36 holes, including Byron Nelson, battling it out. Beat both guys by one to win
even
his lone major title.
Even Lloyd doesn't speak this emphatically about his own.
He doesn't even talk about
win.
This.
Who's
imagine
your
that. Do you want me to give you my pick? Because I got a couple more things. Most PGA.
If there's anything more on
most,
Lloyd,
most,
I'm going to lose
By the way,
it.
Guess who has the most PGA Tour wins with exactly one major? Spoiler alert, it's Mr. Icicle.
Is it really?
36. 36 titles.
I'm going to start calling you Lloyd.
I'm okay. I would be okay with Lloyd or Mr. Icicle. on the list, by the way, most PGA Tour wins. On the list, who's currently obviously on tour, Dustin Johnson with 20. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
16 back of our boy Lloyd. Dustin could one
your
day
boy,
possibly be
your
Mr.
boy. Do not pull me
Mr. Icicle. You know what? Let's go with yours, Mr. Icicle, too.
All right. So, danced around a lot of this. Oh, Lacey's grandpa's name is Lloyd. It's a great name.
Do me a favor. Let's find out the nickname.
So danced around this for a while. When you said obviously Dustin Johnson before, I thought that was actually not obvious at all. I think that we all assume he has at least two. So that was high up on my list. JT, I am almost positive he will win another one. I think as long as we can go play golf at some point after this virus, he will win a second one.
Gotcha.
So I wanted to pick him, but I think it's a bad pick. My pick is Dustin. If he doesn't win another one, if he never won another one,
well, that's how he'd stay on the list.
I know, but I'm just saying, I think he's going to win another one. So for that reason, I'm picking David Duval. I think David Duval, this is a bit of recency bias. I don't know Lloyd Mangrum. Shane obviously grew up idolizing him, maybe played with him a little bit. But David Duval in the toughest era in all of golf, it's essentially what VJ did. He stood up to Tiger. He won a major, obviously, in that time frame. He got to world number one in that time frame. He was one of the most consistent golfers that I can ever remember. Obviously, his career got cut a little short for whatever reason. But I would say for that span of time, not a lot of people have done what he's done, and that he has one of the most remarkable final rounds, or the most remarkable final round of all time.
Well, and it's, you know what, the argument now, I mean, just some Duval stats real quick. He has, he won 13 times on the PGA Tour, you know, including his lone major. He won a Japanese tour event. He won a couple times on the Corn Ferry, four other random ones. He had a stretch from nine. Now this is the thing. This is Max's point that he's making, which I believe you're making. From 98 to 01, when you think about that time period, Tiger was just changing the swing.
Think about what 2000 was.
Right. And Tiger was changing his swing in the 99. Of course, he wins that PGA late 99, his first major since, you know, forever ago, 97. But during that time, Duval, T2nd, T6th, T3rd, 2nd, four straight Masters.
Yeah.
Really, when you look at 98, and Omira birdie in 17 and 18, Duval has to.
Yeah, and if you look at 01, that he was all in that, and just Tiger just played out of his mind.
Just beat him. He had three straight top tens in U.S. Opens during that stretch. He, of course, won that Open Championship, played well, played fine at the PGA. And then, of course, the most random, maybe one of the more random weeks ever in major championship history was that 09 U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Remember at Bethpage where just all of a sudden he was there? Rick Barnes was in the conversation.
David Duval was
there.
A big part of the win at Brookline, the Ryder Cup win.
Huge part.
I'm saying I understand this is an all-encompassing thing, but he played in what is widely considered the toughest time to play in the height of someone who is essentially Superman. He didn't back down at all. I guess the knock on this pick would be that he didn't do it for long enough. But to me. I don't look at it like that. I just look at that span of golf. I would say that if you could transport him from one period to some, like Lloyd Mangrum's best time, I feel like I would take, like, just Duval stands up to everybody with one win.
I mean, just seems a little like you're dissing Lloyd, but it's fine. I'm not. Never, by the way, nobody named Lloyd has ever finished second to David Duval, as I have his page pulled up. He won three times in 97. He won four times in 98, four times in 99.
He's sick.
He won in 2000, then he won the Open in 2001. Sick. Including the players, including a tour championship. Good pick. Not a pick I thought you were going to go with, but I think it's a good argument to be made.
What do you got?
So I texted Paul Azinger, who's on the list, right? One major title. And I said, who would you pick in this thing? And he said, without a doubt, it'd be Tom Kite.
Yeah. I mean, listening to the stats, that makes a lot of sense.
So Tom Kite was just an unreal player during that time. For him to only have the one major was surprising, especially when you dive into how well he played in certain things. But let me just read real quick to you the run Lloyd had in the Masters. Okay, just real quick. Just want to throw this out there.
Who did you pick? Did you pick Tom or did you pick Lloyd?
I'm not getting him up.
You have to pick
yet.
Lloyd.
Just one second. Let me just read this to you. This is
a
Lloyd.
4-hour podcast and 2 hours are about Lloyd Mangrum.
All right, so from 1947 to 1956.
Isn't that when the Nazis finally ended?
No. That was earlier. He
did Lloyd
his
do
last
it?
His worst finish at the Masters from 47 to 56 was tie 8th.
Who else played? I shouldn't ask that, but then we're gonna get into that.
It's amazing. From 1950 to 1954, five straight years, he didn't finish outside the top 10 of the Masters or the US Open. Dude was a stud. And this is after his win, of course, in the 36-hole playoff I mentioned in 46.
Oh, man. I mean, this is like right off of World War II.
I'm going Tom Kite. That's my pick.
Oh, my God.
But Lloyd is right there. I'm going with Tom Kite. I believe he's the answer. Lloyd, I tried hard to make the point for Mr. Icicle. It didn't work. The dude's from Texas. Trenton, Texas. He was a runner-up in three majors. Third in six majors was Lloyd, but I'm going to go with Tom Kite. And that is your one-time major winner. And you're going with Duvall. And the reason you're going with Duvall is because you think and believe that Dustin will win a second.
And JT. Yeah.
Modern buy is a little.
Oh, super. And I've also fortunately gotten to play with them.
Do you remember?
It's like, I know how, like, they're amazing.
I know.
But it's unfair because if they have more of their career to go, like, they would be well off the list. So right. It's kind of an unfair.
When do you I know 97, you've always talked to kind of like your first golfing memory watching. Did you watch golf when you were a kid?
Yeah. Did you watch
like random golf tournaments and stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember watching like a few majors. We would go to the Riviera tournament every year.
Okay.
My family and I, so my dad and I. So that was always, I watched golf. My favorite golfer back in the day besides Tiger was like Payne Stewart was the guy. But I remember watching that US Open at Pinehurst and the one prior at Olympic Club. It's funny if I see it come up somehow on like YouTube now, like, oh yeah, like I do remember watching that, but sure, it's pretty fuzzy. I mean, even I just rewatched the Lakers Blazers game when they make the crazy comeback with the alley-oop, and I didn't remember a lot of that game, like most of the game, honestly.
Well, it's just, I mean, that, how long ago was that?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, I watched all Laker games. Like, so it's just like, it's all fuzzy.
So one of my first, you talked about Duvall, one of my first memories of like sitting down and really getting into golf because I got into it fairly late was when Duvall won at Sawgrass. I remember where I was. I remember watching it. I remember thinking Tiger was still pretty early in his career, but we'd seen how dominant Tiger could be. And this guy was, to your point, he was ice effing cold.
Yeah, and he had the nicest golf swing. I mean, it was just like he had the Annika head, you know, release, and he had like the best exit ever. He was like low left before people exited low left. Like he was a machine. And he was really good in college too. That usually if somebody's like, that's like a Justin thing and a Jordan thing and a Dustin thing, as we're on that topic, like great in college. And then as we were talking about college basketball, then their first year, they're really good. And second year, they're really good. And you're like, oh yeah, this guy's going to be here forever.
Right.
Like, Morikawa and Wolf and all these kids, like, there's a sign, like there's no flash in the pan here at all. Like they're just going to do this forever because they've been doing it forever. And that's how Duvall, I thought, would be, obviously, for whatever reason, just kind of lost it late in his career.
Yeah. One of the guys I work with always says this. When I've run into people that are in their 40s and they're a zero handicapper, they're a plus one or plus two, and they can go out and shoot 68 on, you know, Phoenix Country Club or Dobson Ranch or wherever. And sometimes you'll hear them say that when I turn 50, I'm considering giving the Champions Tour run. And I think it was Curtis that said, I told him that story one time and he goes, if we could beat you when we were juniors and we could beat you when we were pros, we're going to beat you when you turn 50.
I love that.
And it's so true.
It's perfect.
It's because, again, they've been good for this long for a reason.
Yeah, it's like when people say, if I just really practice really hard for the next 2 months, I could play like on the PGA Tour or whatever, something like that. And I'm like, well, we also are practicing.
Right, we do the same.
And I've been doing this for now 20
years. And I feel a little bit more comfortable with a million people around.
I like when they believe that. They're the fun ones to play against.
This was fun. Just a quick reminder that if you want to help out food banks around the country, we've got Get a Grip stickers. $5 or more if you donate it.
Post the receipt.
What's that?
We need the receipts.
We need the receipt just to make sure, because I mean, we believe you. We trust in all of you out there.
I'm iffy.
Okay. We're 50-50 on it, trust me. But we'll be a little bit higher if you actually send this in.
True.
Send it to @getagrippod on Instagram and your address and name and all that stuff, and we'll send it. I'll send you a sticker literally the next day. And then the things get very, very interesting. We have hats and we have $2,500 donation. Shave Max's arms. So what do we say? 75 for a hat?
75 for a hat.
150 for a haiku limerick.
That's going to be a popular one. And then 2,500 big ones.
You're pretty smart. Do you remember how haikus or limericks work?
Forget limerick. Haiku was 575. Nice. And it was usually supposed to be out in nature.
I'm really impressed by you right now.
Limerick was
it's five three, lines. Seven. And I think the what is it? The first and the second and third rhyme with the fifth or something.
Sure.
And it's five. It's like 5-5-7. I don't know, something like that.
Sure.
We'll Google it, and I'll be for sure to read it. But do that and let us know on Instagram. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Anything you got going on?
No, I'm just going to read down a little more on Lloyd Mangrum. I don't think I got my fill tonight.
I'm going to find a book and buy that for you.
Thank you so
much. Appreciate you guys listening. Rate and review it if you can. Follow us on social media. I'm at Shane Bacon. Max is at MaxHoma23 and Max.Homa on Instagram. And yeah, be safe. Be smart. Don't be an idiot. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week.
Wash your hands.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.